Episode 104, Galaxy Quest. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Daryl. And it is a dark and stormy night.
It is dark and stormy.
I almost died on the way here. I mean, this is going to be a great episode.
You need to tell everybody what happened to your car. Oh, that is fantastic. I've never heard of this happening.
It was hailing so hard and so sideways, my driver's side window has a hail crack in it. Not my windshield, my driver's side window. I'm like, what the hell? Come on.
That's amazing. Seriously? I've never heard of that. Yeah, and so Nice ambiance.
Awesome stock. I'll just edit that in randomly in the next couple episodes.
There you go. We need to just set the microphone outside for a half an hour and save it for when we do recordings for StormCloud.
That's a good point.
All right.
Sell up the stock.
Yep, because that's the book that we're selling at unaskedquestion.com/the-storm-cloud.
Is this the first time we've pimped it here? Is this the first time we've pimped it here?
I don't know.
I don't remember doing it last week.
I don't remember doing it last week either.
Doesn't mean we didn't do it.
Probably not. But you know what? It's okay. It's our book. We can pimp it as much as we want.
I continue to pimp it on my show, on my other show, my other show.
So, okay. Last week, or the last episode, we said that we were going to talk about Oliver Stone's Nixon.
Yeah.
That was the plan. And one of us actually prepared
about that.
Yes, actually took the trouble to go to the library, find a free copy, and start watching it.
Yeah, and the other two of us did not. We looked ways both legitimate and otherwise, and had difficulty finding the movie.
Which is odd, because you can usually find anything on the intertubes.
Mm-hmm. So,
we've amended.
We
You know, we're going through this whole apology like somebody's going through a release schedule and is keeping us on task.
Hey, they said the next movie was going to be Nixon. God damn it, I watched it. Sorry, Stingray.
No, I think Stingray watched Galaxy Quest today. I saw the tweets came across. Wow, this movie's hilarious. Why have I not seen this before?
Yeah, so we're talking about Galaxy Quest, which personally I think is kind of a good follow-up.
Stop all the downloading. I'm a computer.
So I think this is actually kind of a good follow-up to Star Trek. Having Star Trek last week, Galaxy Quest this week. Before that, we were talking about Alien and the Aliens movie, Sigourney Weaver. We're tying it all together.
Yeah, that is pretty. That's a nice package.
All right, so
we've all got nice packages here. The backseat producers.
It's all part of being in the backseat.
If you don't have a nice package, you're in the front seat. By yourself.
Sorry, Phil.
Hey, I don't know where I'm going with this. All right. So what are we doing next week, then?
That's a good question.
It's an excellent question, I think.
What were some of the other movies that folks mentioned?
Big Trouble in Little China.
We need more people for that one.
Phil will come out for it.
Yeah, I know Phil will come out for it.
So let's not do that one, then. Snatch. We can do Snatch on two and Lock, Stock.
So that's fine with me. Good.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yep, and Snatch.
Yeah. And Snatch?
And Snatch.
Works for me. I need to see both of them again anyway. It's been a while.
I have sex with one of those things. Just tossing that out there. Just going for the easy joke. It's two barrels.
Yeah, I was going to say, those guns, not comfortable.
You know, you do what you got to do to survive.
Unless you get a really big bore.
Okay. So on that.
By the way, I've come up with a whole bunch of podcasting pro tips. Number one is when in doubt, make a penis joke. Just tossing that out.
It is a pro tip.
It's a pro tip. That's a little bit more than a tip, actually. But all right. Penis jokes aside, Galaxy Quest. High level reviews. What'd you think?
I thought it was a great satire, but done lovingly. It wasn't done mean-spiritedly, which it could have easily been done very mean-spiritedly, and it wasn't. And for that, I love it.
I have to say, this is one of the funniest science fiction movies I've seen in a long time. And I went into the movie when this thing came out in 99 thinking, okay, this is going to be either a terrible satire or just a hatchet job.
Right.
And boy, I never laughed so damn hard. And the fun thing is, you could laugh as a fan, laugh at yourself, because they didn't go for the throat on this stuff. They had all the tropes in there that you would typically see a science fiction convention, and everybody acted the part.
Yeah,
it felt like an inside joke, and I was on the inside.
Exactly,
that's what the entire movie was, and I was cool with that. And Alan Rickman is the man in everything he does. He's always Snape, which is fine.
What was funny to me is I actually saw someone quoted somewhere saying, "I didn't realize Alan Rickman was funny."
Oh yeah,
it's like, have you not seen him act?
Alan Rickman is funny in every movie he's ever been in.
Even when he's being diabolical, he's hilarious.
He's so funny. Okay,
Hans Gruber. He was funny. Yeah, he was hilarious as Hans Gruber. All right, so.
Did you see my tweet the other day?
Which one?
No, I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, I did see that.
Completely out of nowhere.
I saw that. I was like, why is he pulling that out now?
Somebody asked if I actually had a machine gun, and I'm like, you missed the point.
Yeah. Like my quote from this movie today, and people were like, seriously asking me about lathes. I don't know.
We should jump into the structure of this movie, because otherwise we're just going to be saying quotes back and forth.
Yeah, we probably will. All right, so the movie starts off, it's set at a Galaxy Quest convention. It actually starts off with a clip of an old Galaxy Quest
episode.
Which ends in a cliffhanger.
Kudos to them, because it is so cheesy. It's like, wow, that's the Bridge of the Enterprise.
Yeah. Oh, they make no bones about the fact that this is Star Trek.
Yeah.
This is Star Trek, and this is...
Yes, that's the thing. That's the one thing we're parodying.
And it's Trek 20 years later, because it was set in...
1980s.
In the early 80s, 82.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
the show's been off for about 20 years, and
all the
characters... And the actors, this has been the only thing they've been able to do for those 20 years.
Not like that parallels any other set of actors.
Is live off this show.
Yeah.
And of course, the thing is, they're all loved to death by their fans. I mean, there's a huge popularity. But some of them, you know, the weight of this thing is really starting to eat on him, especially the character of Alexander, which is played by Alan Rickman, who sits at his dressing room table and bemoans the fact, I used to do Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody's sitting behind him said, yeah, five curtain calls, because they've heard this all before.
And
the chat room now is full of nothing but quotes from the movie. It's
fantastic.
Did you ever
watch the show? You don't know if there's air out there. Smells fine.
Seems fine to me.
So they're all waiting for the captain, the Shatner-esque character Nesmith to show up at the convention, because he chronically runs late. And of course, when he shows up, he comes in all cheery and happy and like, oh, the show's about to start, and they're all ready to kill him.
And it's a really cool dynamic that they've set up. It's kind of like the old, you know, the old parody of the the band dynamic where the lead singer comes out and he's the one everybody wants to see, and the rest of the guys are just like,
there,
you're everybody else.
Mm. Yeah.
And they kind of set that same dynamic up with this group where Tim Allen plays. It's a weird. He has a long name. I can't remember what his
Taggart.
Captain Taggart.
Awesome.
Yes. That is fantastic.
Good timing.
Captain Taggart, bam, he's kind of a tool, but
Captain
he doesn't
Taggart,
reel it.
Corporate tool.
He doesn't realize it. He just thinks everybody else is having as good a time as he is.
And everyone else is just loves
him. Yeah, and everybody loves him. And he's fully convinced that everyone loves him. The fans adore him, and they do. But he has no clue about the rest of the
cohort. Yeah, everybody else feels about him. And during the point, after their introductions and everything on stage, they're doing their autograph signings. And, of course, he's sitting off by the table by himself, and all the rest of them at another table, and they're looking at him with daggers in their eyes because people are swarming around him.
And funniest thing is he looks over and sees Sigourney Weaver looking at him, and he thinks that she's giving him the eye. So he puts everything on hold, goes over, and tries to sweet-talk her. And she, no clue that she's just throwing him daggers the whole time. It was great.
And then this is where our story gets interesting. A group of fans, if we're led to believe, come up to the table and in rather broken English plead for him that he's their only hope. And
one of whom was Rainn Wilson,
mm-hmm.
who's currently in The Office.
That is Rainn Wilson, isn't it?
Yes.
That guy's a tool.
And of course, he's just thinking that they're ordinary fans. He's sort of like, okay, and you know, he's thinking, okay, this is another gig I'm doing later on,
right?
And these are just the representatives who've come up, and of course, these fans are in full costume.
Mm-hmm.
So he just kind of
which
like
is thinks, not it's not unexpected if you've mm-hmm. ever been to a convention like this.
Yeah, if you've ever been to a convention
of any sort. So he excuses himself off to the restroom, and while he's in the men's room, he overhears the conversation of some of the other fans who more or less school him in the fact that like he's a complete idiot and a total mockery of himself.
Right.
And he sort of, at that point, suddenly realizes at that point he's not loved by everybody.
Yeah, he kind of comes to he has the grand epiphany that, you know, this isn't one big party that everyone is
where
part
I'm,
of.
Yeah, where I'm the lead, everything is not right with my world.
And see, I don't even know if he fully comprehends that he has put himself in the position of the head of this party.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of still thinks of this as everybody's along for the ride. Everybody's enjoying this party, aren't we?
Yeah, yet he's the tool.
Yeah, and he's the one that's kind of getting all the accolades for it. And that leads into kind of the last group of fans that we see.
Right, we have another group of fans come up, and he sort of like blows them off, kind of like a total dick.
Well, and that's when he kind of has his meltdown.
Right, he's totally depressed at this point. He goes back home and crawls into a bottle, pretty much.
And for those who are keeping tally, that last group of fans is led by Justin Long.
Yeah.
Apple.
The Mac guy.
The Mac guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. In the Apple commercials. So,
Tony, he has a serious acting career now. Come on. Drag Me to Hell. Die Hard 4.
Yeah.
He's got some serious titles under his belt. Please.
Of course he does.
Don't this just boil him down to the Mac guy.
He is just the Mac guy, though. I mean, that's what
John everybody Hodge, also Battlestar Galactica brain surgeon. Not
fantastic.
Not a piece of
that was a fantastic role for him, though.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
So he, after his total meltdown the morning after, our first group of fans come back and knocking mm-hmm. at his door, and we find out they're the Themerians, or at least that's what they call themselves.
We've come with our limousine.
Yes. And of course, he's still.
I love how that guy talks.
Yes. And
I think the whole thing. I am just going to talk like this for the rest of the episode.
Another clipped English. Well, anyway, he's in his shorts and he's completely hungover, and he says, "Okay, let me get my pants on, and we'll go do this gig and get this over with."
And if this movie had a different rating, that whole scene would have been a lot more uncomfortable.
Yes. No, that whole scene would have been more hilarious.
It would have been more hilarious, but it would have been a lot more uncomfortable.
Just a dude walking around naked while everybody else is wearing clothes.
Bending over, looking under his bed.
Yeah, and they're staring at his face.
Almost as bad as forgetting Sarah Marshall.
So
Don't bend over.
Slap.
So riding in the limousine, they're filling him on the details of what they need. And, of course, he's still half blitz, so you think, okay, this is just an amateur production. I'm going to walk in, do my part, in and out, boom, it's all over. Well, this until the limousine pulls up to a back alley and then starts lifting up. And then we start realizing, hold on, this is not quite right. And being that he's sort of passed out in the back, he's woke up on the bridge of the supposed, he thinks, is the ship, the Protector. And he's still getting the rundown by the Themerians on what's going on. And they're acting like, you know, this is, you know, you are our only hope. You've got to negotiate with this horrible, evil creature that's, you know, destroying our civilization. And like, okay, he said, okay, this is the setup for the part. We're going to ad-lib the whole thing. So he walks into the bridge, and he's viewing the view screen. We meet the alien commander, Saris, who sort of looks like a big green lobster and has a disposition of one, too.
And he has parts of him that keep moving and flaring out. And it's like one of those things that if you're not paying really close attention, you don't notice at first.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, stuff just starts moving. And when he gets pissed off, it's like this fan flares up around
his head. Right, his ventral fins sort of stick out, and his little fans on his head stand up kind of straight and articulate some more. So he sits there and thinks, okay, we'll just do the typical thing. I'm going to fire all the weapons right in his face, cut loose with everything, blow him to hell, and end of story. So,
which is pretty funny.
It's pretty funny because nobody was expecting him to do that. Just come in, take charge, unload all the weapons at this guy, and walk off.
He became Kirk.
Yes,
he did exactly what Kirk, what everyone was expecting.
Whatever, just fire.
Just fire everything. Just do it. It's like you can see a drunk Shatner just fire everything.
Yeah.
And off he goes. Off he goes, blitheringly ignorant of what's just happened. Because we all think of it, hey, this isn't a set. This is real life. And then he gets the message when they take him back to the loading bay, and he's encased in this gelatinous spacesuit, and then shot into the universe.
Shot into a black hole. And then he magically appears next to his pool. That was crazy.
He's still smoking.
Shivering, quivering, and smoking.
Smoking.
And at that point, he's come back. The next scene, we see the rest of the cast. They're doing another one of these horrible opening ceremonies at an electronics discount store, and they're trying to read their pitifully poor lines and just the most telephoned in performances they can give. And of course, in comes Nesmith, telling him it's all real. Of course, they think, okay,
he's drunk.
I'm sure he smells like booze.
He's late, and he's drunk. Okay, what's new with this picture? Mm-hmm. And he's just racing up and down the booth trying to tell them it's all real. And at that point, they thought, okay, he's completely lost it. But he finally convinces them to come to the back room where the Themerians are waiting, where one of them is waiting, just in case he changed his mind.
Right.
And they're kind of saying, okay, this has gone too far at this point, until they all start beaming out.
Right.
And they end up on the deck of the Protector. Mm-hmm. And this is where they suddenly get, it's like, okay, something's not right here, because we see the Themerians walk in without their human form.
Mm-hmm.
They look like 6 foot tall octopi.
What I like also, not only did they bring the full crew, but they brought that other guy.
The red shirt?
Yes.
Who's played by Sam Rockwell. Guy, he's a fantastic, and his name is even Guy.
Yes, Guy Friedelman.
And he's kind of setting up the events.
Yes, he's.
But it turns out, and none of them realized it. Even like when he told them, he's like, "I was on an episode. I was alive for 5 minutes."
Yes, I was that other guy. I was the expendable crewman.
Right, he was a red shirt.
Yep.
And now they're all here on the bridge, and they're all getting freaked out by the fact, okay, this is reality.
I love when they beam into the cargo bay, like, everybody's freaking out, except for the engineer guy. He's like,
yes, Fred Kwan.
Yeah,
his character is Fred Kwan. He beams in, he says, ooh, that was neat.
Yeah.
Nothing phases this guy, ever. He's just so laid back.
Was that Tony Shalhoub?
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub.
Fantastic. His role throughout the movie was great.
Was awesome. Yeah.
He was like half stoned through the whole movie.
Well, this guy is so cool under pressure. Okay, I get shot halfway across the universe, end up on the deck of a ship with a bunch of alien creatures, and like, only thing he can say is, "Whoa, what a rush!"
Yeah.
He was pretty awesome.
Yep. All right, so we have them all. We have all our players on the ship, and
well, at this point, they're starting to get. They're falling into their roles now that they assumed that in the show, because they find out from the Themerians is the episodes they have been watching Earth's television broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Their society was in apparently collapsing, and at that point, they discovered Earth television broadcasts, which mm-hmm. they think are historical documents. So that's what they keep referring them to. They don't realize it's just a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So they model their whole society around Galaxy Quest.
Well, not just Galaxy Quest.
Well, yeah, they watch other Earth TV shows.
Great. There's a great scene when the actors kind of come to the realization that they think that the Themerians think that this is all real,
right,
and that they're real people. And they said, you can't think this is real. You can't tell me that you think that Gilligan's Island is real. And
they all look down. Yeah,
they're like, oh, those poor people. Like, they just think it's all real.
Yes, they have absolutely find out at that point they have absolutely no concept of fiction.
Yes. Well, and to them, fiction, the only thing they can relate fiction to is lying.
Well, they don't understand that concept.
They don't understand lying and deceit.
Right.
It's a foreign concept to them. And to them, that is only related to Saris.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he even says, it's like...
yes, we're beginning to understand.
Is it Maktos? Something like that? The lead
Themerian. Yeah, he mentions that.
And
the concept of lying, although we're beginning to figure it out.
Right. And Saris is helping us figure it out. And you know, they're like, well, don't you think we could be doing that? And they're like, no. I would never relate one of those qualities that Saris has to you people. You know, you're heroes.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any clue that they're just actors. It's kind of an
I
odd.
Am a hero.
It is kind of an odd Seven Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of they've kind of got that.
Right. We cannot. Going they for cannot it. Do any evil.
Right. Well, and they're actors playing warriors,
mm-hmm.
and they're brought in to fight the battle. You know, much the same way that Seven Samurai and Bug's Life, you know, showed us before.
And it goes kind of interesting. Interesting that you know these. The Themerians are like the ultimate fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they only believe it's real, but they've bottled their whole lives around it.
Oh
being real.
Man, this show needs that.
They drank the Kool-Aid.
Yes.
This show needs people to show up at a convention and then try and abduct us to a studio where we have two movie reviews, or else.
I could do that.
That'd be pretty cool. I'd videotape it, and then I would sell it. It would be great.
We could make a movie of that. We need to stop recording and start writing the script.
Yes. It could be a concept here.
Oh, a concept. Bam.
So what now as they realize, okay, we've got to keep the fiction up, because these... Again, there's nothing else we can do. We're in the ship.
Well,
we're traveling
across
the
at this universe. Point, they're putting on a show for their biggest fans.
Right.
And I mean, it's no more than that. They've defeated the big bad. you know.
Well, they think they have.
Well, at this point, they believe they've defeated the big bad. There's no threat. Uh-huh. It's all about let's put on a good show for these folks. They've been nice enough to bring us into their spaceship. Let's give them a show.
they built their entire society around our TV show.
And they completely build the spaceship to specs based on what they've seen. Mm. Much the same way the fans do, you know.
Yeah, they've reverse engineered all the science just from what they've seen.
And fans, I mean, fans do the same thing with blueprints and models and everything else.
And backstory books.
On the Star Trek Enterprise? Because Jonathan Frakes actually answered that.
Really?
On that big, you know, in engineering, they've got the big model of the Enterprise there. He's actually, it's right here. It's like the middle of the ship. Seriously?
The one
the one bathroom. That's like completely walled off, too. It's just a space.
So as they're beginning to they decide, okay, we're going to take the ship out of space dock. We're going to jump into the roles. We're going to do this. Put on the show. Well, things start to go a little awry at this point. The Laredo, who is their helmsman, isn't quite up to speed on trying to get the ship out of the dock and leaves a nice big scrape mark on the side as he scrapes.
It was like the office level awkward. Like cringing and looking around.
Yeah, they finally make it out.
It's going straight and then starts to list and then everybody starts turning their head.
Yeah.
Looking like doing that.
Like leaning like
when you're playing a video game and you're jumping between two platforms and you gotta make that last
jump. Oh. The beautiful thing about the Wii is that it works for you sometimes. Holden has mastered that in many games.
So away they go off into the universe now. And guess who they run into?
Partially reconstructed Cirrus.
Yes, Cirrus, who is not exactly happy from their last encounter.
Yeah.
Needless to say, he's a little worse for wear with a nice big eye patch and a couple of missing appendages.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
And this time now, he's no more Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, he wasn't necessarily nice before. Now he's pissed. Now he's really pissed.
Especially when he holds the head up of his lieutenant, who was a little slow in getting the shields up the first time around.
So we have an awkward scene of them trying to figure out their roles on the bridge.
Sigourney Weaver's role is so awesome.
She's this odd mix of communications officer and
computer science.
Boobs.
Yeah,
and boobs.
And computer science officer.
I mean, did not see those boobs rocking in Aliens.
No.
Those are new. Those were not there before. Believe me, this guy was looking.
He took me, when I saw this movie the first time, it took me a while to realize, hold on, that actress seems familiar. And then in the credits, that's Sigourney Weaver. I didn't even recognize her in the damn makeup.
Me too.
Oh, really?
Because, yeah, I didn't. Well, she's always been a brunette, and now she's wearing the blonde
the
wig.
The blonde wig.
And the whole different attitude and different body language.
No aliens are chest bursting forth. That was all.
And she was in her rather high
pitched
voice.
And she was playing a rather ditzy kind of role.
Right.
She wasn't playing a dude.
Yeah. There you go.
This is really the whole problem.
And that's just kind of what threw me. You know, Tim Allen, you recognize immediately, but...
Yeah, it's because you weren't looking at her face.
Right.
Come on, let's call a spade a spade. She had a nice rack, and that was the focus of
attention. That's what she makes a joke of in the movie. Says, my TV guide interview was 6 paragraphs long, and it was about my boobs.
Yeah.
And she's pissed about that.
The storm is increasing.
The storm is getting more awesome as we are.
By the minute.
Yeah. Just my luck. I'm sure the Mississippi is going to cave the bridges and be stuck in Illinois. Oh, God, I hate this state.
All right, so.
I have one job on this ship. It's stupid. I know.
But I'm doing it. Yeah, she's the only one who's got her role down. Everyone else is kind of
she's got her role, and she realizes just how ridiculous it is. But she is fully invested in that role,
and she's going to do it to the best she can.
Yeah.
And of course, Fred is also invested on his role pretty well. I mean, he's being he's the engineer,
right?
And he's got
he's pretty much relying on he's pretty much relying on all the Thermians to just kind of tell him what's going on.
Well, they already know their jobs. He's just kind of acting like, you know, upper level management, and just
he's like, just, yeah. So what are we doing?
Oh yes, let's continue to do that. Group hug.
Yeah,
get everybody get in here. Group hug.
He's got it. He's got it down. I mean, nothing is phasing this guy.
All right, so Saris attacks.
Yep. The ship is damaged.
The ship is damaged after flying through a minefield.
And getting shot to
shit. And getting shot, shot to hell and flying through a minefield. And they're out of
beryllium.
Beryllium
sphere is broken.
Yes. And so they're basically out of fuel.
So they're floating around, and then a planet has them.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a nearby planet which has...
Even though these fictional power sources apparently exist on this planet in their natural form.
Yes. So off they go to go pick up a new beryllium sphere. And they all go down, and they're looking around in the rather desolate place. They find an abandoned mining camp. Full of beryllium spheres, of course, is how handy. And it seems to be inhabited by these little blue creatures.
I think miners, I can't tell from here.
Yeah.
They look like they're about three.
And of course...
I said miners, not miners. Sorry, you lost me.
And of course, Gwen wants to go out and pet them because they're cute. And of course, Guy grabs her and tells you, "No, this is just like it is in episode such and such. The cute little creatures turn out to be vicious monsters, and there's millions of them, and somebody dies, and it's usually me."
Yeah,
so he's starting to freak out. He's fully convinced
that he is the red shirt, and he is apparently the one. Of all these people, he's the one that really knows what's going on because he's watched the show before.
Yes, he says, "Don't you ever watch these episodes?
This is how I died."
Yes.
He's totally freaked and paranoid that he's going to... Uh-oh. Oh, they lost the computer.
No, just the monitor.
Just the monitor.
Oh, okay.
Everything else should still be on.
Okay, we recovered.
We're good. We're still good.
Yeah, we had a little power fluctuation there.
That was loud.
Well, it was right next door to us, so. So Fred is, I mean, Guy has got himself in a tizzy, and all the others are trying to calm him down. And, of course, Nesmith decides, okay, he's going to do his big Kirk impersonation. So he's out there rolling.
rolling is great.
And they're all walking along beside me saying, "Do you think the rolling really helps? They're going to create a distraction. You lead them off this way. We'll run in and grab the spear and be out of here," just like in episode such and such.
That's when Guy said, "That's the episode I died in."
And of course, the plan goes to crap immediately.
Yeah, and the little critters separate, or actually, they get the beryllium sphere, bring it back to the shuttle.
In a dead run.
In a dead run with these, whatever they are.
Millions of these little critters.
These little gremlins following them. They get to the ship, they get on the ship. Nesmith can't quite get on the ship.
Can't quite fit.
Yeah, he can't quite fit with the sphere and with everyone there. And as they close the hatch, he ends up falling out and getting...
Grabbed by
ambush. Yeah, ambush, knocked unconscious. Great little scene where they're talking, where the critters are talking, and they're like trying to decide what they're going to do with it.
Well, let's hit it with a rock.
Yeah.
Let's hit it with a rock.
Thunk. All right, so it wakes up, or he wakes up in basically this gladiatorial arena with this pig lizard,
which is giving him tongue.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. And then he's like, "Oh, I think I can take this thing. This is going to be really easy." And then they get like the universal translator going to translate the chant.
Before that, they're trying to get
the teleporter
to work, and they don't know if the teleporter is going to work.
They've never used it
because the Thermians are convinced that because the anatomy is different. They didn't want to test it on themselves because they weren't sure what was going to happen.
Right.
So they decide they're going to test it out on the pig lizard.
And of course, they don't feel qualified to run it. They need
Tony Shalhoub
mm-hmm. or Fred to come in because it's more art than science, and only you really know how to work this thing.
Yeah.
And of course, at this point now he gets stage fright. And they have to calm him down and get him to get up to the controls and give it a shot.
This is the single best line in this movie. Yeah. Things are fine. Everything's fine. But the animal turned inside out and then exploded.
I heard that. I heard that.
And just a single time.
So the whole time, all these little critters have been chanting this word. And he thinks it's the pig lizard. Tim Allen's character thinks it's the pig lizard. They turn on the universal translator, and come to find out they're chanting rock, 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 rock.
He can't figure out what the hell is rock is. The whole place is rocks.
Rock monster
comes to life.
Yeah, which
sounds like a bad sci-fi movie, which they actually made.
Imagine that.
Called Rock Monster.
The rock monster. Effects were actually pretty cool.
Yeah, they were pretty cool. It's like a big stone golem from WoW.
Mm-hmm.
So it's after Nesmith, and it's chasing him around, and all this time he's radioing up, like, how do I get out of this? And the Alan Rickman character, Dr. Lazarus,
mm-hmm.
is telling him, he keeps asking, well, what's its motivation? It's like he's trying to analyze this thing from an actor's perspective.
Guy jumps on. He goes, do you have anything you can craft as a weapon? Right. Can you maybe make a rudimentary lathe?
Yes.
You know,
I actually
tweeted that just that line today. Maybe, is there anything you can craft to make a rudimentary lathe? People responded to me with questions about what I needed to use the lathe for. Some people were actually quoting Galaxy Quest lines back, but a few people were asking me about making a lathe. It was
hilarious. I worked in a machine shop. I know what a lathe is.
Good for you.
I know.
Awesome. So he's being chased around by this
exploded
thing, trying to get away from it, and of course he's getting the worst advice ever.
The best part is, in true Shatner homage fashion,
yes.
Somehow his shirt comes off.
You know, it's being torn to pieces. Yeah, he loses his shirt.
His shirt's gone. And so finally, when they figure the teleporter out enough to get him up, they teleport him in, and he's like, oh, thank God. And then Alan Rickman's like, oh, of course. Somehow you managed to get your shirt off. Oh, my God.
And, of course, he still hasn't figured it out, what they're all talking about.
Yeah. All right.
Oh.
So, we got him back on the ship.
And things go from bad to even worse. Yeah. Now we find out that Saracen is back, and he's taking over
the ship. He's already taken over the ship. While all this is going on, Saracen is taking over the ship. This was actually, I thought, very well done for a comedy parody. They actually took one of the tropes of the sci-fi movie that all this time is spent...
Right.
While we're in distress and the bad guys are chasing us on this planet doing this thing, yet we have time to make it back and still protect the ship. No. Bullshit. The bad guy came, took over the ship while you were up doing this.
There's a couple other subtle things in this movie.
I thought that was really well played.
There's a couple other subtle things in this movie that I didn't pick up the first time I saw it. Like, when they pull out of the space dock,
mm-hmm.
Their planet is like three quarters destroyed.
Yes,
and they mentioned that Saris did this, but it's just gone.
Well, this is like a big apple core. You just got the two poles and the sides are missing.
Which I thought was clever. So, I forget how this whole confrontation goes down.
Well,
at this point they were captured and they were all taken
up to the bridge where Saris is brings them all to the bridge where the head with the leader of the Therians is at, and he's giving him the good old shock treatment, and he's got Nesmith up there, and he has to say, okay, now tell him the truth.
Yeah,
he says there's nothing I can do to him any more than you're going to do, because you're going to have to tell him the truth. And that's going to, of course, destroy his entire world.
So they do the big reveal.
Yeah, the big reveal is he admits to Mathras that the whole thing was a TV show. Right. There is no truth to it. There is no real ship. There is no Galaxy Quest. There's no nothing. It's the whole ship was a little tiny model, mm-hmm. and you've all been fooling yourselves for all this time.
It's all a television program. It's all fake. It's all a lie. It's all deceit and lies.
Yes, we're just actors. We're not actual warriors.
Right.
Well, I am, but...
And, of course, he's totally crushed on this news. And at this point, he's going to not only destroy kill everybody, he's going to destroy the ship and walk away from this whole thing.
He's gonna basically turn the reactor on itself and blow the ship up with its own reactor.
Mm-hmm. Typical science fiction, over the top.
Right.
Ridiculous death scene. Giving every character ample opportunity to stop.
Sure.
Things. And of course, as they're being led to the airlock to be blown out, Nesmith and Alexander, start this fake fight between each other.
Yeah, they talk in code about an old episode, mm-hmm. which they've come to find out that the bad guys haven't seen any of the shows. Yes. They don't understand
all the historical documents.
They haven't seen them. So if they start talking about those specific episodes, they can use that against the bad guys.
And they get into this mock fight there in the airlock, and they mm-hmm. manage to brain the guards and throw them into the airlock.
As soon as they space one of the guys, like, it flips to Saris on his ship, and like the dude smacks into the windshield and slides off.
Well,
and
yeah. Saris
is like, seriously, come on.
The thing, yeah, he's one of Saris's lieutenants say there's some trouble aboard the ship, and he says, "What makes you think that?" And then thrump right up against the window, he slides off.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, that stuck a little bit. I'll have to get some of my guys down here, WD-40 that.
Give it a spray. So they're back now trying to take back the ship, and they all split up where Nesmith and Gwen run off now. They're going to go to the core and try to mm-hmm. shut it down. Alexander and the now energized guy mm-hmm. who suddenly realized that maybe he's not the red shirt, but he's the plucky comedy relief.
Yeah.
He suddenly finds new solace that, hey, maybe I'm not going to die in this thing. And they go off to try to rescue the Therians. And this is where, we get Sigourney Weaver and Tim Allen now doing some more parodies of their previous shows. Mm-hmm. They start having... Nesmith realizes he's got to call in some real help on this, so he gets on this.
And it's... Okay, yeah, that's... Yeah, he's that's got when he calls get, in the real help.
Then he calls in the help. It's the kid he during one of the earlier scenes, he dropped his communicator, or he switched... communicators got switched. The kid's got a real one, and he got the fake one. But he calls him up, and he apologizes to the kid and tells him, hey, it's all real, and I need your help to find my way through this ship.
That does seem was great, because the kid's like, you know, I know it's not real. I'm just some loser kid sitting around playing with blueprints of everything. And he's like, it's real. I knew it!
He calls up his buddies.
And they all start IMing and having web conferences, and they get all these expert team together to navigate them through the belly of the ship to the reactor core. And as they're crawling through, Sigourney Weaver says, ducks. It have to be ducks.
That was
because
great.
It's all she's seen ever be crawling through in Aliens and Alien.
There's, at one point... They're approaching what they refer to as the chompers.
The chompers.
And the kids are like, yeah, you got to get to the chompers. We're going to figure out the timing for you. At one point, they show Sigourney Weaver's face. And what her mouth says is, screw that. That's not what her... Watch her face, that is not what she says.
Yes, they had to edit that in order to keep the lower rating.
Yeah, she says, oh, F that. And she doesn't say F. If you watch her mouth, you
this was a stupid episode. Yeah. Whoever wrote this should die.
And some of her best lines in the movie were the next couple lines where she is just bemoaning the writers. It's like, this is the stupidest episode ever written.
Why does it have to be this? Why does this is unnecessary?
Who
why is
put this stuff in here?
Whoever wrote this episode needs to be shot.
No, it should be die. As all the flames start coming up behind them, it's like, who puts this stuff in here?
So they step through. I mean,
well, they manage to get through all the hazards, and they come underneath what we later find out is what Saris has been looking for, the Omega 13, which is this mystery alien device. No one knows what the heck it does. Mm-hmm. Beautiful shot. When you look
this really cool purple tentacle.
It kind of looks like DNA, actually.
Yeah, like a fractal DNA. Mm-hmm. Very cool
off
stuff.
They go into the core. They find the shutdown switch. They hit it. And, of course, it doesn't stop.
It just keeps going.
And at that the point, brilliant. They think they're all going to die.
Finally,
Nesmith is off.
And there's like 18 seconds left. They go back to the kids. The one kid had to go take the trash out for his mom. So he's trying to run back. He's like, you don't seem to understand just how important this is.
Don't forget the recyclables. Yes, the mundane life does enter in sometimes. So just as the whole thing, what they think the whole ship's going to explode, he gets ready to say something to Gwen. That he's going to reveal how he either felt for her or what he thought of her, but they're grasping each other, thinking this is the final moments. And of course, it stops at 1 second.
Yeah.
Well, of course, because it always stops at 1 second.
That was great.
That was clever.
All right. So we then get at this whole time. There's the rest of the guys are trying to save rescue the Thermians. The Thermians.
Rescue the Thermians and then kick off the green guys.
Right. Because you've got this troop of green guys who are basically protecting the area that they need to get to release.
Right, the barracks, yeah.
Yeah, the barracks to release the air back into the barracks.
Into the barracks, yes.
Where the Thermians are, where they're being held and being
suffocated,
drained of oxygen.
Yeah,
yeah, they have nothing to breathe. So
the resolution of this is so brilliant.
And at that point, Guy comes to the conclusion that, you know what? Maybe I am the red shirt, but damn it, if I'm the red shirt,
I'm going to go out
as a hero. Yes. I'm not going to just die needlessly. So he grabs his gun and he starts going, and Tony Shalhoub's like, "Wait a minute. I got an idea." This idea was genius.
They beam in the rock monster.
They beam the rock monster onto the ship. Where it beats the living crap out of the green guys, and then manages to bust a hole in the sidewall, and they all blow out
into space. And of course, his line was, "It's the simple things in life you live for." God damn, it was so good.
Oh, and this is the big sex scene, is it?
No, not yet.
Not quite yet.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Why, seriously? All right.
No, that comes just a few minutes later.
Just a couple minutes later.
Well, no, that's true. You're right. Right? It's Tony Shalhoub and his newfound girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
They are so relieved that they start just can't keep their hands off each other, and as they're making out, she can't seem to hold her form very well, and we see all the tentacles
surrounding him,
and he's looking at it and says, this could be interesting.
And Guy, the look on Guy's face is like,
oh that's not right.
I don't need to be here for this.
No, that's not right. She totally loses her ability to hold her shape. We get a little jab at the tentacle. Yeah, the tentacle section of anime.
Oh, that's not right.
All right, so...
So then... Alan Rickman and his little protege guy rescue the other Thermians.
Mm-hmm.
There's a death there.
Yeah, the one Thermian gets shot,
mm-hmm.
and Alan Rickman, who has been bemoaning this one line that he's had to say over and over and over throughout his career at all these events, he doesn't want to say it. He says it just out of, you know, financial contract, and that's the only time he ever says it anymore. He knows that. This And
it's the point where he finally
says, the kid even says you were like a father to me at one
point. Right. This is a point where Alexander suddenly realizes it's not a game to them.
Right.
This is reality. And that point at which he gets the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he has to fall into the role
by Grebthar's hammer. I will avenge you.
Will be avenged.
And I mean he gives that character everything that he was hoping for in his death.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes and kicks that alien's ass.
Yes, he suddenly starts channeling this character into him.
Yes.
So after everybody has more or less accomplished their missions, they're back on the bridge, and they start making a run for it. Again, they decide to make a run through the minefield, but this time Laszlo's been practicing.
Well, they've got Saris chasing them.
Right, they make a run for it with Saris chasing them, but this time again, Laszlo's been practicing his driving and now can pilot the ship really well.
Mm-hmm.
So zip back through the minefield, and Saris is chasing them all the way. This time, he's going to blow the crap out of them once and for all. And then they suddenly realize, Taggart realizes, hey, these mines seem to be drawing towards us for some reason. They seem to be a little magnetic.
Yeah.
So make a 180-degree turn, come back at Saris, and Saris and Nesmith start having their little conversation with each other. And Saris says, you know, I'm a general, and you're, you know, how can you match me? And he says, well, doesn't take a good actor to see a bad actor, and you're a bad actor. And besides, I'm towing about a zillion mines behind me.
And they duck out of the way, and the mines just blow the ship to hell. They're all celebrating, and at one point, somebody turns around and points out there was a strange energy fluctuation off of Saris's ship just as it blew up. Should we be concerned about that?
Nah,
everything's fine. Everything's all right.
And who comes up to the bridge but Fred?
Yes.
Which is kind of unusual.
And we found out from the Nerd Brain Trust that the Omega 13 device is some kind of ultimate weapon. Not really sure what. The general consensus is it's a bomb that will
blow the entire
universe in 13 seconds. Or it will reverse time for 13 seconds. It will reset time for 13 seconds. Sigourney Weaver's character even says, "What good does that do?" And Tim Allen Nesbitt says, "You can make up for one mistake, basically.
Do over.
It's a do over. It's Mulligan. A reset." So, Fred comes up onto the bridge,
and he starts shooting people. The first person he plugs is Ned Smith and Gwen,
mm-hmm.
and all hell breaks loose. Now, as he's shooting up all over the place, Guy totally loses it. But he's not even being shot at.
Yeah.
He's panicking that he's going to die, and he's not in...
he's the one that doesn't get
hit. He's the one who doesn't get hit, of course. And as Nesmith's crawling up to the controls, I mean, suddenly it's Saris. Saris reveals himself as he was in Fred in disguise,
mm-hmm.
and Nesmith crawls up to the controls and activates the Omega 13 device. Well, then we see what the Omega 13 device actually does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 13 second rollback.
Right. Everyone is affected by the 13 second rollback with the exception of Nesmith. He's physically fine. He hasn't been shot, but he remembers everything that happened in the intervening 13 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Fred comes up under the bridge, he goes after him, decks him, starts beating the hell out of him. Everybody's wondering what's going on. They pull him off. Just as they pull him off,
Saris
pulls out the gun and they stop him.
Malazar comes.
Saris's foreign projector quits.
Right.
And we see that it's Saris, and he's lying there unconscious, and as they're congratulating themselves, Saris pulls himself back together, picks up his gun, and gets ready to plug Nesmith again, except Mathis now realizes what's going on, beats the crap out of him with his crutch. of course, never give up, never surrender. And at that point, the...
does he actually say that?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he says that.
Toy Story.
No, it was all through this movie.
That's the catchphrase.
That was Tim Allen's catchphrase.
That was the catchphrase from Toy Story, too.
Yes, enough to make everybody crazy.
Whatever.
Yeah, it was Tim Allen's.
I'm mixing up my Tim Allen.
Yeah. You like that, yeah? So off, now the Therians have now found their newfound, have newfound confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready.
Well, they have to separate the ship because for some reason it's going too fast.
It's going too fast toward the Earth, and it's going
to
blow
up. It's
going
to crash. They have to separate, et cetera, et cetera.
Give us a good reason to get back home.
Yeah. Fred decides to stay because he's boinking the new tentacle chick.
No, he's not staying. It's the new tentacle chick is coming with
him. Oh, yeah, she comes with them.
That's right.
And then they have the ending. Well, the ending sequence is... Wait a minute.
Well, they're flying into the Earth, and of course they have to get the nerd brain trust now to give them a beacon to land the silly thing. And where are they going to land it? They're going to land it right back at the convention center.
Right.
Where they're having the show at. And of course, they're supposed to be on, but they're running late. And they manage to crash land a ship in the parking lot and crash
into
through the wall
building.
And into the building, into the stage of the convention center. And everybody in the convention center thinks, oh, this is part of the show.
Great special effects, yeah.
And as they all stumble out of the ship onto the stage, they get their introductions, and they're kind of dazed about the whole thing. And as they're all taking their bows in introduction, guess who pops out of the ship too? It's Saris. And of course, Nesmith does his famous tuck and roll and blasts Saris with a blaster.
Nukes him, and everybody cheers, just thinking it's part of the show.
It's part of, yeah,
not realizing.
It's reality is staring him in the face. And the crowd goes wild. The best Galaxy Quest show ever.
Doesn't the show get picked back up?
Well, yes. And that's
where it ends.
The ending. The ending is the new adventures of the further adventures of Galaxy Quest.
Yes, been renewed.
And they start going through the crew, and they list off everybody. And they list off
Guy
Freeman.
Well, before that, they do Fred and
Jane Doe.
And whatever her name is.
Well, her name is
Jane Doe as
Larissa.
Is it Larissa?
Larissa. Well, anyway. And then Guy walks in
as Rock Ingersoll.
Security chief.
Rock Ingersoll. He's all cheesy, buff. Yeah, check me out. I'm 70s cool.
In the 80s. Or in the 90s. The whole show at that point has now been renewed for a new lease on life. And I think we think our heroes are set.
Roll credits. That was it. There was talk of making a Galaxy Quest 2.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no need for that.
No.
I don't even know where he'd go with it. We've already done the joke.
Yeah, the joke was enough once.
Well, I know where you can go with it. Because when you have nowhere else to go, you make a penis joke.
One production note here. Some of this in the special effects where you see the crew getting shaken up on the bridge,
mm-hmm.
It's not the camera moving as you would typically do in a special effects. They actually built the stage on the gimbals with hydraulic rams.
Nice.
And instead of, they held the camera still and shook the stage. So much so that a couple of the actors were tossed around and got some injuries because awesome. It was such a violent
shaking.
That is
awesome. All right, so...
I got nothing else, and I'm tired.
Yeah, we went through the whole movie, so...
That seems to be a trend now, yeah. Star Trek-type movies.
But if you want a good comedy...
Yeah, 10-year-old movie. Yeah, it's easier to do it that way.
If you want a good comedy for rainy day, you can't hardly beat this movie. I mean...
And it was just released as, like, a special edition 10-year anniversary deal. So it can be had. You can find it. Thinking about going and picking it up myself. I forgot how good this movie was. I mean, it was one of those things that I saw it once, probably about 8 years ago, probably shortly after it came out on DVD, and it was like one of those, yeah, this is pretty funny. You know, I watched it with Julie, and we appreciate it,
It's a movie.
But unless I'm watching it with the context of having just seen Star Trek, I mean, it's so much more fresh and so much more in your face then.
Well, there's also a movie, won a Hugo for Best Dramatic Presentation for 99.
Really? I was not aware of that.
Yep.
It's hilarious.
And it's a movie you can watch several times and never really get too terribly tired of it, because you can always notice some little detail and joke that they slipped in there.
I got nothing else on this.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't either. It's not I restate my high level overview. It was a loving parody. It was done with an appreciation of the material. It made fun of it, but it didn't mock it. You know, the making fun of it was more in the characters.
It's making fun of the situations of the and the tropes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not an indictment of the journey. It's just having fun with the idea.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's it.
All right.
So next week, Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. Is that
Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels comes first?
Okay, and then Snatch.
Then Snatch. Because they're sequels. It's a sequel.
You're making me work. Trying to find these things now.
Oh, no, these are common if you can find
these,
them.
These should be a lot more common to find.
These ones I actually have to watch, though, because I don't remember either movie.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen them. I'm going to have to watch them also. These we should be able to pick up a little more easily than not.
All right.
All right, see you guys next time.
Yep.
See ya.
Bye-bye.